IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast supported by Pragati, a flagship media initiative of the Takshashila Institution. We're a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like to bring a fresh perspective to Indian affairs and an Indian perspective to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to All Things Policy. If you may remember, listeners, we've been talking about the Personal Data Protection Bill for quite a while now. It's something that we speculated on for multiple podcasts and in different research meetings. Sapni, of course, has been a part of them more recently. And we sort of keep a hawkish eye on the recent developments that the JPC has, members of the JPC have, and so on. So imagine our surprise when we saw that Jairam Ramesh, a member of parliament, tweeted a dissent note about the JPC. He's also a member of the Joint Parliamentary Committee and was a bit dissatisfied with some of the suggestions that he had made that had not been accepted. And so he's made them public. A few other MPs have also filed dissent notes, but we've only seen sort of glimpses of them or what they might say. But this provides us a very interesting context because we expect the Data Protection Bill to finally be sort of out this winter session. So having said all of this, it's a pleasure to welcome Pratik and Sapni on the podcast. We're going to be talking about this. But before we do, I wanted to talk to you about courses. See, if you're interested in the kind of podcast that we do and the stuff that we talk about, you might also be interested in Takshashila's courses. We've got the Graduate Certificate in Public Policy and the Graduate Certificate in Technology Policy, in Defense and Foreign Affairs and Health and Life Sciences, and also a postgraduate program, applications for which are open now. So we will add a link to the show notes and you can take it up from there if you want to. Right. So Pratik, Sapni, let's dive straight into this and let's talk about some of the changes that we've sort of been able to get a better view of. I know that sections 35 and 12 of the Personal Data Protection Bill have gone through significant changes compared to what Jairam Ramesh sort of wanted them to go through. So Sapni, why don't you tell us what's been happening there?
Right. So section 35 is the section that sort of gave a broader umbrella of exceptions to the government of India, to the states. Even if there are contradictions with the Puttaswamy judgment, which made certain acts, even if committed by the state, unlawful. So the Section 35 essentially gives a sort of leeway or more like a very big hiding for the state to circumvent the provisions laid down by the bill. And this was very contentious starting right from even the 2018 bill had similar provisions, but not as expansive as Section 35 of the 2019 version. So this has been a continued controversy for quite a long time. So Mr. Jairam Ramesh, who talks about his discontent with Section 35, stating the obvious that it almost gives unbridled powers to central government. And he says that he had pushed for approvals for extensive exemption for the government. So he argues that, you know, even when the government is doing something after parliamentary approval of the law, it must comply with the bill's requirements of fair and reasonable processing, which is obviously the central part of the bill. He gives suggestions he says that he'd given proposed amendment suggestions stating that public order, which was also given mentioned exemption to Section 35 under the 2019 bill, that ought to be removed. And that, he says, was a very broad exemption that the government could use, given that it is, again, constitutionally also contested in various other spaces. And he also talks about further the exemptions that are broader and limit it to without Section 5 and 24 and chapters 8 to 15, I think. So these are chapters which talk about processing. Section 5 talks about the basic idea of consent that is important, and etc. And so these exceptions, which again Section 35 gives to the government, Jairam Ramesh wanted them taken back. And also, he also suggested that, you know, all the orders which are issued under Section 35, Clause 1, which basically gives, which is the clause that gives the government that leeway, that it should be, those orders should be passed with only with the permission of another established law, which again is in consonance with the Puttaswamy decision. So that is with respect to Section 35. And on Section 12, Section 12 essentially talks about the exemptions for processing without consent. And there the government again gets a big leeway. And Section 12, in with regard to Section 12, Mr. Jairam Ramesh talks about how Section 12 different exemptions should be only in cases where the Consolidated Fund of India is involved, in cases where for provision of benefits, the consolidated funds are utilized from the Consolidated Fund of India. And of course, adds an element of additional element of proportionality onto the processing requirements. So these are what we know as of now, the dissent on Section 20 and Section 12 and 35 on the basis of the bill that was said to be adopted on the 22nd of November.
Yeah, so these seem to be exceptional sections, right? If I can call them that, if you'll excuse some bad humor. But, you know, as pointed out to me, I think at this point, we haven't seen, right? I think it's important to call it, right? That we haven't seen the report. It's not been made public yet. We haven't seen the draft. So a lot of what we're saying is based on reporting, right? And I think there's also some amount of conflicting reports. Because I think I saw one of the reports with regard to Section 35 saying that there has been some new language added about, I think, that the procedure for applying exemption needs to be just, fair, and proportionate, right? So I think we'll have to wait and see how this, what final wording there is. But broadly, yeah, it seems to be that the reasons for concern with Section 12 and 35, right, those haven't gone anywhere. The underlying reasons still seem to remain.
Right. The other thing I sort of am quite interested to sort of talk about here is the idea of platforms at publishers. I feel like this conversation, much like this bill, is going to sort of widen its scope a little bit. So Pradeep, talk a little bit about that. How has that idea changed over time?
Yeah, so this is a very interesting and a worrying one, right? Because I think at first passing, a lot of people are saying, look, what is this whole concept of trying to regulate intermediaries through the data protection bill? You know, what is it doing there? But again, it's not entirely new, because if you recall, even the 2019 draft had references to verification of users, right, for social media platforms. So it's been coming, right? It's just expanded in scope, right? And what the clauses seem to say, at least based on what's been said about the report or what's been reported about it, is that, you know, so there's this implication that there is a need to regulate social media intermediaries because they're working as publishers of content in many situations, because they have the ability to select the receiver of the content and exercise control, right? This is a quote from an ET article on it. Which then goes on to say that, look, because of this, there needs to be a mechanism devised for regulation. And essentially saying that social media platforms which do not act as intermediaries should be treated as publishers and be held accountable for the content they host. Right. So there's an interesting, phrase in there, right, which is do not act as intermediaries. Right. Now, I don't know how we're necessarily making that determination. But again, like I said, we're relying on, you know, on different reports and here and there. So there was a report in the Quint, which then seemed to allude to the fact that, you know, this may apply to those who don't mandatorily require user verification, right? And they should lose their status as intermediaries, which then makes them liable. So we'll have to see where this, what final wording, you know, what the final wording is, what conditions they are actually in there. But, you know, at a meta level, this is, you know, it is concerning in the sense that, you know, there are implications for intermediary liability through the data protection bill, plus the whole, the idea of anonymity, right, and mandatory verification of users and how that will play out. So we'll have to see where this goes, but this is something that I am particularly concerned about.
I think, but it's particularly also concerning to note how the transition, which Pratik rightly identified, from you know, moving on and regulating on the specific aspect of personal data protection, it has further expanded into the realm of platforms, then further on to non-personal data. And as we've discussed, this sort of seems to be going the way of a vehicle with no ultimate objective.
Right. I think this is sort of, I think Prateek mentioned in one of the older podcasts that we did about scope creep. I feel like this really sort of widens the scope of where this bill can apply to and how it's going to be implemented. I also think, and I think Sapni mentioned this in the recording, the pre-recording chat that you were having, that it's not just now the personal data protection bill, it is now the data protection bill. So I remember that I think section 91 or 92 in the previous version was talking about non-personal data. I think it was just two lines talking about how non-personal data will be regulated. But now that distinction does not exist. This is the data protection bill, and it is one bill to rule them all, as some would say. So, Sapni, you want to talk a little bit more about that?
I think it's precisely what probably I mentioned a little earlier about how the idea, you rightly identified this whole concept of function creep, I mean, scope creep, right? And even when it happened in the 2019 version of the bill, which stated that for specific reasons, the government will be able, or government will be legally allowed to get non-personal data and anonymized non-personal data from companies for purposes of welfare and other government purposes, as and when it is notified. So it is interesting to see that the reports now state that the preamble of the very bill itself now has expanded into non-personal data regulation. So sweeping statement, if I were to make, would be that right now our personal data protection law has probably moved on into a space of data governance for private entities and their use of data, right? As against, because rightly, as we rightly were discussing about the expanded exemptions the government has under Section 12 and Section 35, and plus the same thing about verifications, right? And that poses on platform mandatory, even if it is voluntary, that poses a great deal of threat for how our interactions on the digital sphere are regulated, or they can even flourish. So based on the idea of non-personal data protection also being included within the scope of this bill, it is concerning that non-personal data to be mandated to states from other entities are a major problem for businesses, right? So a lot of intellectual property issues come into place, and databases have copyrights, and specific user databases have copyright protection. And all of this is a challenge that even smaller and larger entities, business entities in India will face. And that will be a point of concern for all players, and regardless of having how much interest they have in personal data. And given that the non-personal data regulation regime across the globe is extremely nascent one, and two, in India, there is barely any idea even of personal data protection regulation. So moving on to that at this stage might be extremely vicious, I would say, for the businesses in our country, because that might really hamper the sort of growth that based on non-personal data, whatever growth we can have based on non-personal data. While the section itself talks about this exemption to the government under 91 being only for purposes of enhancing digital economy and its governance, the line is thin.
Right, thanks. I think that's a pretty interesting point to take a quick commercial break on. When we're back, we'll discuss more about data localization, a 24-month period about private entities will get to adapt to the bill and so on. But for now, let's go to a quick commercial break. Hi, we're back. We're talking about the data protection bill with Prateek and Sapni. And let's sort of now talk about the DPA and disclosures that they're quite interesting. So Prateek, you want to begin with the DPA and what these recent updates mean for the the yet to be formed entity?
Yeah, so this is I think the broader concern is that there is continued reduction in the autonomy of the DPA. So going back, I think the initial bill had requirements for one judicial member. And this is the 2018 draft. Right? The judicial member and one nominated person of repute, right, in courts. I think the 2019 draft bill removed that, and I think the report suggests that this one goes a little further in saying that the DPA must also take direction from union government in most matters. So on the disclosures bit, as I understand, I think some of the changes are about, one is about the period for reporting. I think that's been changed to breaches have to be disclosed within 72 hours. Again, I don't believe there were, I think there was concern about the fact that it was not mandatory to disclose them to end users. And I think that condition stays, right? So it's not yet mandatory to disclose it. If your personal data is affected, it's not necessary that the company that was affected by it will necessarily disclose that to you. I think there are certain conditions there. So that hasn't changed. But I also believe that there is going to be a requirement to inform a person in case their data has been shared with a third party, right? By a data fiduciary, and this notably is not applicable to the state, right? So if it's applicable for private firms, it's not applicable to the state. So and it goes back to what we spoke about Section 12 and Section 35.
Right. I think that's quite interesting. I also want to sort of talk about something that Jairam Ramesh had mentioned in his bill, in his dissent note, which was that the government is treated basically like a separate class of stakeholder as compared to the private sector. And this is quite evident in the 24-month period that the bill now gives. So I think there have been different versions of this. In a version, I think, by the Justice Shri Krishna Committee, the bill said that there will be an 18-month period. Then that runway clause was removed completely. And now, so basically, the private sector will have 24 months to comply to the provisions of the bill, whereas the government actually doesn't have to. So let's talk about these two sort of separate classes of stakeholders and what this 24-month means to the private sector.
Look, so the way I see it, right, I think the essentially a transition period, right? Just like you had with even with GDPR, I forget exactly how long it was, but you need to give businesses time, to change processes, to change systems, to build in the necessary things for compliance, right? So I think, from that perspective, it's fine. This aspect of it applying to private companies and not to states, that's been a common thread. I believe even from what we've seen reported of Manish Tiwari's dissent note, he made a similar point, right? That if there are going to be exceptions, if the state doesn't require consent, if security agencies can get exceptions on the ground of security of the state, international, relationship with neighbors and public order, then, it's not surprising from that perspective that the 24-month runway does not necessarily apply to them either, right? It's up to me. I don't know if you want to add on this.
Made it pretty much clear, because the government, again, the exceptions, it runs back to the threat of exceptions that the government has, and that probably doesn't augur well for us in the longer run as users and as data principals themselves. So that is a worrying concern, and it has been rightly highlighted by some of the dissent notes that we've seen in the reports that have come out of that.
I remember some time ago, Prateek and I were at a conference, and I was asked the question of, what are some of the provisions in the bill that clients of lawyers must be concerned about? And you mentioned this exceptionalism for the government, but the other thing sort of that was brought up was the data localization aspect of this. We've seen different kinds of localization being suggested in the bill for different kinds of data, for personal data, personal sensitive data, or critical personal data. But as of right now, as things change, or as things stand, there's a bit of ambiguity around localization. So do either of you want to get into that and how that's changed over time?
Okay, so on the localization bit, what seems to have changed is, I think that the 2019 draft specifically included in the context of sensitive data. I believe the new draft now incorporates it for sensitive and critical personal data. And we may even see a definition of critical personal data, which until now was not defined, right? And I think some of the reports, and this is, I think, you know, to be confirmed, but some of the reports also suggest that there is a requirement for data already in possession. So I wonder if that brings the retrospective element to that, but we'll have to see. And that part remains, I think, unconfirmed. So another interesting aspect, again, is about, you know, it seems to have incorporated even hardware equipment into this, in the sense that, you know, data collection by electronic hardware should be under the law. And I think this is interesting because, again, if you recall, I think in sometime in October, the FTC put out a report about ISPs, right? And they said, I'll quote, that they can be at least as intrusive as large advertising platforms, right? I think it's interesting that hardware equipment, you know, which will include your telecom operators, et cetera, have also been, there's talk of them also being included or coming under the ambit of the bill. In certain ways, I think, you know, that bit of it makes sense. Again, we'll have to see the exact wording. But, you know, if we're talking about data and personal data, or, you know, as Sapna suggested, now a broader data governance type data protection bill, then having hardware in equipment involved is, you know, the data that's gathered at that layer, you know, it makes sense. But yeah, we'll have to wait for the exact wording.
I think that's the final one that you made about us waiting for stuff. I think that's going to be the theme of this podcast, because we get to see the final version of the bill or the dissent notes that most other members of parliament have filed. And right now, this seems to me like a bit of a masterclass in scope creep. But we'll see how that turns out. Too early to say. Time will tell how this thing progresses. But we'll keep our eyes peeled and see how the now data protection bill is passed and in what form. So thanks, Pratik and Sapni, for joining in. And thank you, dear listener, for being with us through this podcast.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle, @TakshashilaInst, or our website, takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week: Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank, and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.